This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
1720 WGN.
Some people see the revolution, but most only see the girl. I can lose my heart and freedom if my fear defines my world. I declare my independence from the critics and the stones. I can find my revolution. I can learn to stand alone.
Whew, happy Thursday night, everybody. It was a beautiful day in Chicago, ending in this soupy, swampy fog we have descending upon downtown Chicago. Joining me in the Allstate Skyline studio, we have Todd Belcore. He's the executive director of Social Change and one of the folks that helped WGN listeners, actually, in general, with how we understand the story. Because if it were not for Todd Belcore, I would not have started to learn the ins and outs of how to talk to our legislators, where to be at the right time, you know, and where and when to be in the right place. So I want to thank Todd Belcore, and I'm so thrilled that he can join us for the show this evening. And we also have Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. He's also a regular. He's, well, the Mincing Rascals started with you and John Williams. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, how did the Mincing Rascals come apart?
I have no idea.
Because
Eric Zorn said, "You do anything right now?" I went, "No." And he said, "Follow me."
Right.
And that's what we ended up here in front of general
people.
Yeah.
And
lay it at their lap and they'll come up with something beautiful.
Yeah. So we take on the headlines of the week on Thursdays and we podcast it. We were unable to convene today, so the podcast will be ready to go tomorrow.
Are you going
to
be there?
I will be there. Okay. Yes. Todd, we take on the big headlines, all political stuff.
Oh, really?
On Thursdays. And you know, I save up till Friday. I don't do it every single day.
Yeah.
I decided that during the presidential campaigning in the summer of 2015, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it every single day.
Yeah.
That has continued to be the case.
Mm.
And Scott knows because we started taking, he started betting me on the.
Oh, God.
That's an easy
Todd, over-under
bet
not
there,
bet
Scott.
Against
don't
this
do that.
Person.
Don't
no,
do that.
Don't ever.
He and other people did not think that Donald Trump would survive past the first debate. Yes.
And we kept escalating and it got to the point where I was waxed live in the Showcase studio on, you know.
One thigh, one armpit, his back and his nose hairs were all waxed live on the air.
But then everyone else in the studio had their nose hairs.
What was that?
Everyone else in the studio had their nose hairs.
I can feel the pain even now.
Yes. And I think that's how politics should be. There should be some personal pain involved.
That's nothing. Truly skin in the game.
Exactly.
For God's sakes. Take it easy, Scott. No more.
Nothing drastic. Nothing, you know, that's scarring or anything like that. But a little, you know,
no.
Hair removal.
But you were, initially
the emotional scar is different than physical
scars.
Well,
there's that because I had people, drunken people on Michigan Avenue at midnight going, what is he doing? The other thing is you opened it up initially, if you remember, to listeners.
Yes.
What I could have waxed.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had veto power, thank God.
I believe it was our very own Esmeralda Leon who decided on patchwork, sort of like one of these and one of those,
wow.
like one thigh, one armpit. One, yeah, that was Esmeralda. I think she's very creative
that's very
in
clever.
That sense. Yes.
I mean, that's a different level of misery, but it's very clever.
It was. Now, some of the things I want to talk about tonight, Todd, you and I missed each other in Springfield. I know you were down there for some work. I didn't get down there until Thursday, and Thursday was when things really accelerated, Thursday, Friday, into Saturday and even Sunday. And one of the things that was debated on the floor of the Senate late on Friday night was the comprehensive protection of women's reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
And today, Scott, that the Archdiocese of Springfield said that he would no longer be
Madigan or Cullerton.
I think anybody. They expanded it to anyone who voted for that legislation.
Right.
And they are saying that communion will not be given. Although I don't know that Cullerton or Madigan attend services. I guess once in a while they happen to be in Springfield on a Sunday. This isn't something.
Well, and Cardinal Supich has said kind of tap danced around the question. Would he also enforce this? And he gave no definitive answer. So,
well, I'm curious as to what the distinction is because their stance has always been in this direction.
Right.
So, what distinction is there now on this legislation? And I know
what do you mean?
Well,
they've always been in this position, always been in this camp. Why after this piece of particular legislation they decide they can't?
Well, that's a great question. It should have been 30 years ago when this kind of mattered. Now it just seems vindictive. Right. It's also ecclesiastically questionable whether or not they should or should be able to do this. Mm-hmm. As a practicing and devout Catholic, I find this, you shouldn't, it's not something you should deny someone. And if it's not taken in a state of grace, which is supposed to be, then that's not up to us to decide.
Mm-hmm.
You see how this works?
That's
God is pretty clear on this one.
On
most things. Well, on most things like this, it's his decision if you're good, bad, if you're going to heaven, hell, if you're die or live, that's his decision, not ours. And so when we make it ours, then that's when things get...
Do they deny that sort of opportunity for any other circumstance? Because I know half of my family's Catholic, and I know I've gone up, and they've looked at me, and they're like, nah, you're not Catholic.
Really?
No, they don't say that.
They don't say it, but since I don't know the rituals and I don't do my fingers in the right orientation,
you put your hands out.
Wasn't there a sign of that? I'm with you, Ty.
Hey, I'm batting 2 for 10.
Ty,
so you tell me.
No, communion is pretty simple nowadays. In the American Catholic Church, you walk up, you have your hands out. He says, "Body of Christ," and you say,
yes.
"Amen."
And, oh, you do? I don't know either.
Yeah, that's it. You get a free piece of bread.
Todd, you're not supposed to go up.
No, that's not true. That is absolutely not true.
What?
If you're not in either a state of which you consider yourself to be in a state of grace, or you're not Catholic, but you want a blessing, you go and you put your hand across your chest like this. I'm just going diagonally across my chest, and the priest will bless you, which is it's just good karma.
Oh,
half Wakanda for people who aren't here.
Half Wakanda. I guess Wakanda would be this one, right?
Wakanda's both. It's a half Wakanda.
Yes,
half Wakanda. So you and I can go up and do the pledge of
now
grace.
I know.
Yes, I'll go with you. There you go.
There you go.
Right. So I think to Todd's point, though, have there been other situations under circumstances under which they would withhold communion?
Oh, all the time. Don't forget, they tortured Joan of Arc by denying her communion.
Is that how far back you had to go?
No. They've had other...
I wasn't expecting that to be the next case scenario.
Well, and of course, Henry III.
Correct.
We all know what happened there.
Oh, boy.
Man. Mm-hmm. No, but it's happened, and it's happened in American politics as well, with abortion, with death penalty. The Catholic Church has denied it, or at least the diocese at that point.
Right. So the intention is to punish, to withhold, to say that you and the sacrament. This is what it's called, right? Communion is considered something that you're supposed to. Because I'm not Catholic, so
okay.
So what is the significance, or what happens to you if you're not able to take communion? Is there something?
Well, it's denying you the expression of your faith. It's denying you the ability to taking communion. Is you're in the Catholic Church, is you're taking what we feel is literal blood and body of Christ.
Right. Okay. It's a rebirth of sorts.
Yes.
It?
Oh. Okay.
It's a reminder of his death and of his resurrection.
Okay.
And so by denying that, you're denying the right to acknowledge those things. And so as a Catholic, that would be very painful.
So isn't his death and his resurrection intended that symbolically, and the intention was to absolve people of their original sin?
Yes.
Right. So then why withhold them the ability to be absolved of sin?
That's the ecclesiastical argument, and it's a punishment.
Okay. Which is not something that Jesus intended in any way, including... for the thieves that were on the cross.
There are going to be many Catholics out there tonight who disagree with me on this, but I feel strongly that denying communion to someone is very, very serious. And for a temporal political reason, I just don't know if you should do that.
Well, and I guess that they would, obviously the argument is that it's not political, it's moral, that morals have been made political, which is a lot of what we base our decisions legislatively, right?
Well, isn't that isn't that just our moral code codified?
But it's not Catholicism codified?
Mm-hmm. I say cod. Say code.
Cod.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Now that I hear it both ways, they both sound good.
Because it's code, right? But it's cod.
But cod, has a little ring to it, too.
I think so.
And then, little fish and chips to it.
I need some vinegar. More after this on 720 WGN. It's almost Friday night. We're all jamming in the Allstate Skyline Studios like it's Friday night. I want to thank you for joining the Patty Vasquez Show. I am your host, and we are having a great time with our co-host tonight. Guest co-host Todd Belcour, riding sidecar tonight, is Scott Stantis. And we've been talking about the Archbishop Archbishop of Springfield, stating that he would be denying communion to those who voted for the comprehensive women's reproductive rights bill that passed over the weekend. Joining us on the line is somebody who wanted to join the conversation. Hey, Bradford, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Patty, nice to hear from you. Thanks for letting me chat. I appreciate it.
Of course. What do you want to tell us?
Well, I was just listening to your conversation. I'm a big WGN fan of TV and radio, especially in the morning, but I'm heading home, and I'm very surprised at why anyone would be shocked by this announcement. I grew up Catholic, was heavily involved within the church, worked for an organization affiliated with the Catholic Church for 21 years, and when I announced that I would be marrying my husband, who I'd been with for nearly 20 years, I was told I would need to leave the organization and was pretty much denounced by my Catholic faith. So, you know, why are we surprised at these actions?
It's not as much surprised, right? I guess, you know, surprised would be aghast or, you know, but it's kind of like, well, it's a shame, I think, is more the point of view I would take on this, that we would deny folks. And I'm reading right now that that there was a Catholic bishop who instructed priests in Illinois to not only deny communion, but also last rites and funeral rites to people in same-sex marriages unless they repent. So, go ahead. Go ahead, Brad.
After being a Catholic for 50 years, it caused me to leave my faith, which was a very drastic and hard thing to do, a very emotional choice to make, but they gave me no choice.
Right. I was in a restaurant one day listening.
I would hope these politicians would have the same conviction.
Right.
They would feel the same ownership and the same passion for what they believe in, and I just feel like it's a shame that they're being forced to denounce their faith.
Right. And I think that
it's something they still believe in.
I mean, was there ever an opportunity, Bradford, where I know that there are some churches that Catholic churches that are supportive of women's reproductive rights, and there are my husband's family are Catholics who support abortion rights and same-sex marriage.
But not the church.
They're within, right, not the church, but okay. They are groups within the Catholic Church.
That's why I was looking askance, because I thought a church doing that would be shocking to me.
Right,
Catholic church.
Right. Go ahead, Bradford.
Right, and Patty, that's a good point. I mean, there are Catholic churches that also have leadership, whether it be a priest or leadership, who also are welcoming of the gay community as well. But it's the ultimate choice of the Pope and the Catholic Church, and so you can't have your cake and eat it too, or you can't be a cafeteria Catholic. You have to uphold what the true belief of the Catholic Church is. So if they're holding that to be true, how can you be part of that organization?
Bradford, if I may, I mean, Todd here, as someone who's been in the church for, well, Jesus, 35 years now, if I was looking just for a church that agreed with me in everything that I personally agreed with, I would never find a church home. So where do you practice now in terms of your faith, and where do you exercise your religion?
I don't practice anymore because after 55 years, I was told I didn't belong in the church that I grew up in. So I don't have a faith to believe in. So because I was told I don't belong.
Have you sought out other Christian groups that are welcoming, or are you interested in that?
I have found others that are accepting, and I'm trying to figure that out.
I support you. I mean, I agree. That's one of the reasons I don't. My husband and my son have dropped off going to the parish that we've all been going to for years, because they were very disappointed in many of the sermons, which included a lot of language that was derogatory and was hurtful. They believed, and I feel toward those who want to express love and want equality, and toward families that want to be able to have control over their future. So I understand that completely, and I'm sure that we're going to get some texts from folks who will want you to come to their parish. There's a lot of churches throughout the Chicagoland area who are like, send Bradford our way and come.
Yeah,
I get those emails too. Yep.
And I understand Todd's position of, nothing's perfect and you know, there's not a right mold, a perfect mold for everyone. But at the same point, it's pretty blatant when they say you can't believe this way. If you believe this way, you're out. And that's what they're saying about some of these politicians' behaviors, and that's what they're saying about the gay community. If you behave in this way, you're out. Well, then I'm out.
Yeah, there's a big difference between not agreeing with someone's opinion and not agreeing with someone for who they are. So I can understand why if someone's making you personally feel like you're not welcome versus some of your opinions or beliefs aren't welcome, how it's completely different. I can see that for sure.
Bradford, this is an interesting point from Marilyn. Just because they voted for the law doesn't mean they themselves would seek or approve of abortion. They were doing their jobs as their constituents directed. I mean, a lot of folks ran on the platform that they would strive for reproductive rights protections. And I actually got a text from a Catholic who said, the U.S. Catholic bishops are going to break my loving and beautiful church with their hypocrisy and small-minded bigotry against women and LGBT faithful. And that's coming from inside my house. It was that text.
Aww.
I know. So, Bradford, have a wonderful evening. I'm going to take a break here. Right. Thank you so
Before
much
we
for
all
sharing
start
your.
Up here.
I know. Yeah, thank you for your story, and I hope that you do find some place that is welcoming, whether it's in a church or you know, obviously in your community and your friends and family.
And
of course.
God does love you, Bradford. Just let
me
know.
Yeah, Patty, I really appreciate you bringing this topic to the forefront, and I appreciate, even though my topic wasn't exactly
it is though
in line.
No, it is.
I really appreciate you taking my call. It's a hard topic, and I really appreciate you bringing this to the airways. Thank you so much.
Of course, and Bradford, I knew someone would text me. They said that the Bridge has a church in Des Plaines, and the Episcopal Church would perhaps be a better choice for same-sex marriages.
Right.
So a lot of texts coming in.
Bradford,
yeah.
Which is zip code?
Exactly.
Solve this today.
You know what?
Yep.
You know what? Love all around, everybody. Love all around.
Well, we Absolutely. Love you, Bradford.
Great.
Have a wonderful evening. Be safe, okay?
Have a good night, everyone.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. Coming up after the news, let's learn what Sky Arts is. We'll check in with our friends Sarah Ward and John O'Malley, and I'll continue our conversation with Todd Belcourt, Scott Stantis. You can always join us at 312-981-7200. Your news is sponsored by Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic. Here with everything you need to know is Don Kleppen. Feel good to be hanging out with good people. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Joining me in studio is Todd Belcourt, the executive director for Social Change. What other titles would you like me to make sure I read?
I'm gonna, because
of you and some other guests, I'm going to start putting an index card at my guests' seats so they can write down what they want me to say about them. Because they always tease me when I forget how to introduce them.
No, you've been perfect. I mean, 2018 was a little rougher year.
We had a lot more titles, awesome. Like associate professor at Northwestern and the University of Chicago. You were doing all kinds of things all over the city and all over the country. You were traveling back and forth to Missouri. I know you've been traveling around the world, been very busy. So we want to make sure we honor what you do. We want to honor what Scott Stantis says for the Chicago Tribune, editorial cartoonist, member of the editorial board, and a regular contributor here at WGN Radio, as well as the Mincing Rascals. Joining us in the studio right now is John O'Malley, former U.S. Deputy Marshal for the Northern District. Is that right, Deputy Chief, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's not whatever. I'm getting him an index card.
We're not talking
too.
About guns or anything tonight.
He messaged me and said, hey, I am part of this incredible organization, Sky Art. You must meet Sarah Ward. And as John O'Malley asked, and as he's, again, a regular contributor here, not just at WGN, but also on WGN TV, he said, you got to meet Sarah. And if he says, he sent you, Sarah, is what I'm saying. You're somebody he sent. Tell us about Sky Art and how you are encouraging and inspiring children to get in there, roll up their sleeves, and have fun with their imagination.
Just it's so simple, just being there for kids and being in the neighborhood has allowed all the kids and all the kids on the South Side to kind of embrace a space that can provide warmth and love and food and art.
Right.
And just the staying power of it has changed a lot of lives, I think.
And what inspired you to get involved and to start this in the community that you've built this?
They found me. I was at juvenile court doing art therapy with kids on probation and in the abuse neglect side of court. And I noticed when I went to a home and took a kid out and they were on probation. They had six sisters and brothers sitting there wanting to do art with me too. And I say, you can't be with me because they hadn't committed a crime. And I felt like it was I wasn't modeling very good behavior for the future kids.
You wanted to be able to embrace them. Yeah.
So I just wanted to be in a neighborhood, be a stable person for them. And someone found me because I was talking out loud about my dream, and it came to be in 2001.
That's really
congratulations.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Where is your work housed?
Mm-hmm. 91st Street in Houston. And so it's right under the Skyway. Wow. So it's as far southeast as you can go in the city.
For people who aren't
but
from
we're all
here,
over the
that's
south
real
side.
South.
Yeah,
that's
south.
That's not Roosevelt
south.
Road.
Yeah. People don't even know it's there.
Yeah.
They say, oh, South Chicago, and they think I'm talking about the south side, but it's actually the name of the neighborhood.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's the name of the neighborhood?
South Chicago.
South Chicago.
South Chicago
yeah.
is a neighborhood.
It's
yes.
a neighborhood in Chicago.
Oh, I would not have known that. Excellent. Like, what are the neighborhoods that are also served? I mean, because it's not just
well, it's the largest ward in the city. It's a 10th ward. It is so it's where the steel mills were,
mm-hmm.
Which is as large as the loop, where the USX steel site was, that spans from 79th to 95th Street.
Okay.
And then from the lake all the way to Mackinac. So it's Millgate, which the gates of the mill, and the Slag Valley, East Side, Hegwisch, and the Bush.
Wow.
All in South Chicago.
And John, how did you get involved with Sky Art?
Well, I'm very artistic in nature. I was at a mutual friend of Sarah and myself's, Barb, at a like summer cocktail thing, I think, and just chatting, and the conversation always comes up, you know, what do you do? And Sarah was telling me what she did, and at the time I was still active in law enforcement, and she really caught my attention because I've heard of so many programs over the years, this, that, and the other, that help kids, and I've never heard what she was describing, really. So I had to investigate.
As you do in law enforcement.
With his arms crossed right
first
now,
her.
I'm telling you.
First, I had
more.
To investigate Sarah.
Yes.
And then I investigated Sky Art, and I was, how do I get involved, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, much like Sarah's her earlier career, I saw kids and young adults and then very naughty grown-ups who were on the wrong side of the law. And my whole time in law enforcement, every time I came across a bad guy, I thought to myself, if I came from where a lot of these guys came from, knowing my naughty nature, I know I would be probably on the wrong side of the law. So how do we, when these kids come to that crossroads, how do we keep them on, you know, a positive path? And Sarah's being pretty modest because the things that they are doing at Sky Art, I know a little bit of, and it's unbelievable. It's gone from just doing art to learning how to cook and what good foods to eat and expressing yourself in so many different ways that it's incredible, and everyone should know about it.
Thanks, John.
I love that. And Scott, I was if you get a chance to watch the video, it's available on YouTube. I might have it's in the link in the email that I sent you. But
okay.
But I was watching one young man drawing on an iPad, which reminded me of the way that you now sketch. He does the cartoon to the Chicago Tribune right on an iPad, and it's amazing how much technology really transforms the way we can also express ourselves too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
And what I love what Sarah says is they're not teaching art, really. And Sarah, please slap me, throw your cup at me. They're not teaching the kids, like, here's how you should draw. It's just express yourself, and everyone has a chance to come there, and it's free, and it's started, Sarah, right? Just maybe something to do after school, and now the program has just gone crazy, so.
And everyone can go to skyart.org, and there's on the menu you can click on how to get involved, whether it's donating your resources, time, or money, and you know, finding out more about how to sponsor an event, maybe underwrite a program.
Yes.
You know, get involved. And because people are always talking about the problems of the city, and they're always saying what needs to be done, and here's a way to fundamentally get involved and have, you know, an impact on a young person's life.
What age kids do you do you work with?
So we work with just the Head Start programs all the way to 24 years old.
Okay.
We also do like collaborative programs with senior citizens. It depends. I'm an art therapist, so that means I'm a therapist with, I communicate through creative, you know, expressions. And so when I supervise master's level interns. And so if they want to work with the senior citizens and do partnerships with the children in the neighborhood, we do that. So there's no real age that we don't work with, but generally we focus on 7 to 24-year-olds. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing team program on the weekends called Project Third Space, where we make a home-cooked meal for them, which I'm making this Saturday, and feeding 33 of them. And we eat on plates and forks, not, you know, paper.
Right.
And they eat everything we make for them. It's kind of amazing what a privileged kid would say no to.
Right.
They have open arms and they're excited to try all sorts of new foods and just to be loved. And it's a really, really beautiful space. And it is, just to say, this is the only free art program, year-round art program in the city of Chicago, where on any given day, a child can show up at the door and we'll let them in. And that's pretty amazing. And we're on the far southeast side. We're in a neighborhood nobody knows about. So,
How many kids do you have?
Well, we serve 1,200 kids in the school a week. And then we serve about 50 a day at Sky Art Studios. Right. And then we're at the DeSable Museum. We're at the juvenile. We were at the juvenile detention center. We're all over the city doing kind of programs where we're needed.
And the gentleman to your right, Sarah, he doesn't remember, but last time I was here, he's going to come by and talk about to the kids what he does.
Yeah, I volunteered.
Wait, is this a call out?
No.
I think that's actually how we got to talking about this when I met you,
yeah,
Scott,
yeah,
and Art, and I said, hey, would you come to
I said yes, Art and then Center? You never said at the time.
Well, here she is, the boss, the CEO, the president.
Okay. No, there's nothing better, honest to God, there's nothing better than talking to kids, and by kids, I mean up to, and including adults, really, is when you start drawing and using that, and just you have a blank piece of paper, a couple of pencils or pens, and you just start, okay, what do you think about this? What do you think about this story? What happens now? What do you think this could be? Oh my God. And it just becomes this wonderful adventure.
Yeah. Opening up their world. Opening up everyone's world.
Further. Absolutely.
You're talking about a population of people who are invisible to the larger society. So this is oftentimes the first time they can articulate what they're actually dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So it may sound like, oh, just scribbling on a piece of paper or just some unrefined sort of expression of art. But actually, it's people putting their heart and their soul through paper on canvas and expressing in a way that they've never been afforded the opportunity to express it previously. So I don't think we can really overestimate the value this has, because in many ways this is people putting their testimony in writing or in script or in paint, and it gives them a level of freedom and expression that they would otherwise never ever have. So this is such an invaluable program, and I'm really grateful that you all are putting it on.
And then acting, right, Sarah, or I don't know what you want to call it, acting, but you can explain better of expressing themselves and making the costumes and all those things that they're doing. So it's just outside, just doing, artwork or things of that nature. So many things have expanded. Sarah had envisioned, some kids would say, well, I'd love to come, but I can't walk those 5 blocks
right,
to get to the center because
it's territory.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
So, Sarah said, what about, if we bought a van, like a 15-passenger van, those vans you see that take people to the airport,
yeah,
type. And we made it happen, right? And now that van there to get the kids who can't walk there maybe just a little bit further. And somebody in the room may know the mayor and may have mentioned what great things Sky Art is doing. And
oh, you mean because she called this show?
And
she celebrating?
Can do.
Oh, wait.
Yes,
because
Patty's
you,
friend.
Yes, because you encourage her to do
so. So I am, Sarah, working very hard to get Mayor Lightfoot out to Sky Art. I want her to see in person what wonderful things are happening. But I also told her I don't want the city to come in and ruin it because, right? But there's such potential to expand this to Humboldt Park or to, other areas of the city that are also just so thirsty for programs like this. And, we always talk about our board meetings about being not to grow too fast and lose focus and lose the grasp on what a great program Sarah has built from a little tiny storefront to this dry cleaner. She had the vision to look at this rundown, vacant dry cleaner, said, yeah, that would be a great, if you saw what it looked like before. There's a video on YouTube about that too. But who would envision that this dilapidated dry cleaners would turn into what she's made it? It's unbelievable.
It's incredible, Sarah.
Yeah,
it's,
and when you say the city ruining something.
Well, I'm being a little facetious.
Let me take a break here and let's talk about the good things. There was a study that, and the results came out today, or at least some information about what the life expectancy is in Streeterville as opposed to someplace like Englewood or the community that you're serving. And let's talk a little bit about that and the impact that you can have with helping these kids. Kids live longer, healthier, and happier lives. More after this. We're hanging out with Sarah Ward and John O'Malley from Sky. Well, Sarah Ward from Sky Art. And you're on the board of directors, John?
Yes.
And you can go to skyart.org to find out how you can participate, donate your time, your resources, maybe sponsor a program. Todd Belcourt, the executive director of Social Change, joins us, as well as Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And we'll be mincing tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals, which will be available shortly thereafter. And then David Hochberg's right at the window, ready to take your questions at 11:40. He's writing down his notes. Look at how serious he looks. He doesn't even know we're talking about him. More after this on 720.
We're angry.
I know, right? It's very serious. The show started every time we come back from a break. Ashley, you can't play fun music that we just want to dance to.
And please tell me, Patty, you know who that is.
Cool in the Gang? Was that Michael Jackson? I have mentally, after watching Leaving Neverland, I've mentally blocked out everything he's ever done.
Oh my God.
Well, for what it's worth, you also have difficulty historically in naming music.
So. Yes, it's true. I also
That's why I asked you. Terrible.
I have appalling lack of musical knowledge.
Difficulty, not terrible.
Let's call it challenge.
It's appalling. It's appalling. The way people react when I don't know a song, they're appalled.
She's the gold standard in not naming music.
I had a friend, Lenny Schmidt, he's a comedian, and we were in an Uber, and there was some music from the 80s, and I go, who sings this? And he goes, you're kidding, right? And this Uber driver started playing along. He started fast-forwarding through all these 80s songs. Lenny almost threw himself out of a moving car. He couldn't believe how bad it was. He was so appalled. So it's all right. I don't mind. But is music one of the things that you guys share with the kids at SkyArt? We're talking to Sarah Ward, who created SkyArt to help kids in a disadvantaged part of the city. And ignored, as Todd mentioned, a place where the kids are invisible to the community in many ways. Is music part of the program?
Well, we definitely hire teachers with multidisciplinary practices. We have a teacher that was a graffiti artist, a musician, and what else does he? He's a cook. And so any studio that they can go into, we allow them to do that. What we do, we don't sit a child down. They've been in school all day long. We don't sit them down and say, these are the primary colors. We say, hey, we're going to be in this studio, and it's about creating, and they learn through creating. So it's process-based learning as opposed to product-based learning. And so if a teacher says, I'm into music, and the kids are too, then they can create music in our digital lab.
Well, wonderful. And it's great to have really access to that. John O'Malley joins us as well. He's a former deputy chief of the Northern District for the U.S. Marshals. Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And Todd Belcourt, who is the executive director for Social Change. And I have to imagine, we've talked a lot about, we talk obviously about the headlines and whether it's violence or the rate of drug use illegal behavior and things like that. And one of the issues that seems to come up a lot is conflict resolution is something that isn't necessarily taught. And in communities where maybe the parents are working or there's a lot of other stress going on in their lives, conflict resolution is one of the problems that people have in the most disadvantaged neighborhoods. Wouldn't you say, Todd?
I think that's something that's not being taught across the board. I just think when you deal with so many more stressors, you're more likely to break and get frustrated and react in particular circumstances. I mean, just yesterday in the NBA finals, a guy pushed an NBA player and ended up getting tossed from the arena, and he's an investor in the Golden State Warriors. He's a multimillionaire. He doesn't know how to deal with conflict. So imagine what it's like if you're dealing with aggressions and mistreatment and abuse and trauma day to day. and you're dealing with all these difficult things, and of course you're expected to act like a model citizen. So Officer O'Malley mentioned it earlier, just like, if I was dealing with these same circumstances, how likely would I be to always be acting as an orderly, do as you're told sort of citizen, when you have very few instances where you're allowed to do exactly what you want?
And that's where Sky Art comes into play, right? Which is play, right? Which is expression.
And a lot of what we do, too, is collaboration. And so conflict comes up in collaboration across the board, right? Yes, and so part of our model is really inspiring the kids to work together. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting about South Chicago, I came from New York City in the early 90s, moved here, and it was very obvious, and still is, how segregated our city is. New York is block by block. Here, it's a totally different issue. And South Chicago's black and brown, which is odd for a neighborhood. It's poor, but it has diversity. Mm-hmm. But that means block by block, they're different gangs. And at Sky Art, we have a racial mix, the same racial mix of the neighborhood, which is 60% brown and 30% black. Mm-hmm. And that's the mix in there. So they're meeting each other for the first time. They're collaborating. They're communicating. Because even when you go into the school system, they're segregated within the school systems as well.
Because of the schools, depending on what block they live on.
No, you go into a school and it could be a mixed school, but they'll be segregated in the classroom and they'll say, well, the brown kids speak Spanish. And I know the kids in the class don't speak Spanish. It's about discipline. It's about, it depends on the principal, but I've seen it in the school systems as well.
So the way that they divide the kids up is based on racial...
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. I mean,
yeah. Well, Chicago, mostly you go into a neighborhood and it's all one race, so you don't see it unless you go into a mixed neighborhood, and then you go into the classrooms and see it.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is that it's hard to explain to folks when you go to a school and you're kind of the one that's different, you know, or wanting to fit in with everybody. So when you have it in a situation where everybody, you know, is divided from each other, then when you come into an area where you can play together, that's got to be significant for all of them.
Yeah, and they play so, they just get to know each other, and we do food too. So we'll do salsa and, you know, or we'll do collard greens, and everybody will eat culturally different foods, and they'll be like, this is really good. And it's really exciting. Like, food brings everybody together. We have a 4-city lot garden with 30 right. fruit trees
what?
In it down the block. And I mean, we created that garden in 2003 because I thought, we want to bring the kids out and have them be inspired, like all artists are, by their environment. And all I saw was trash. So I was like, let's plant a garden. Yeah. And we got 4-city lots for a dollar back when Daley was mayor.
Sure.
I almost said president. back when Daley was mayor. And we didn't even pay the dollar, but we got them.
Right.
And there are 30 fruit trees there. It's like a magical space.
Magical.
And we draw and we paint, we sculpt, and we sow seeds, and we harvest, and we cook.
Let's take a break here and learn more about the magical space that Sarah Ward and her board of directors and everybody involved with Sky Art have created on the east side. So it's South Chicago on the east side. That's what I've been texted.
3,000 East.
3,000 yeah. East. Over by there. More in a moment.
Well said.
Oh, I missed a button. Everyone's very excited in the studio that I was able to name the artist. I cannot name the song. Prince, just because of the tone of the music and that little I don't know what that was.
It was him getting erotic.
A little bit of flavor.
It's Erotic City, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. All right, officer, I see you over there.
I saw the way your energy changed when the song came on.
I was like, okay, O'Malley.
I know what's up.
Is that what you were listening to in your Crown Vic?
Oh, wow.
I used to drive a Tahoe, man. Chevy Tahoe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize, sir. Actually, you were telling Scott Santis and I some wild stories about your days in serving with the U.S. Marshals, which I know are not for air, so we'll someday.
I don't know anything about that.
I know.
They're at 1:01 a.m.
That's right. Exactly. In my office, there's a bottle.
And I always say they're 70% true, 30% color.
Well, they sounded pretty good. That's just John O'Malley, former deputy chief of the Northern District of the U.S. Marshals. Sarah Ward, who has created an incredible and, as she described it, magical space for kids on the east side in South Chicago. It's Sky Art. You can go to skyart.org to find out more information about how you can participate, donate, volunteer, maybe sponsor a program. We have Todd Belcour, who is the executive director for Social Change. Scott Santos is trapped in a conversation with David Hochberg outside the studio. He is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And Sarah, you were mentioning that you are you originally from Chicago?
No.
From New York,
no,
is what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh.
And then went to San Francisco for college and went to New York to work in the public schools and then came here for my master's.
Did you say you started SkyArt in 2001?
Yeah.
So that's 18 years ago. Yeah. You don't look old enough to do all the things that you said before that.
That's sweet.
But seriously, people say I look young, but you look, I mean, you look like you're in your late 20s, early 30s is all I'm saying. So at any rate,
double
you don't have to go
and add 10.
We don't have to go into anything besides that. So you studied in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Went to school.
Yeah.
And you know, what did you set out in life to do? What was the plan?
Advertising, because that was acceptable. Right?
Yes.
So I think a lot of when you tell your parents you want to be an artist, they're like, oh, you know, I'm not going to pay for that. So I was like, well, I'll do art direction and advertising. And then my senior year in college, I saw all the trash in the street and I saw all the women in San Francisco walking around in their Chanel bags and their BMWs and realized I'm going to participate in making people feel insecure,
right,
and trash in the world. And this was in 89. And so I transferred, changed my major to a bachelor degree of fine arts, graduated as a printmaker, moved to New York City to teach children in the Lower East Side.
You brought up something interesting, which is making people feel insecure. I was dating a boy in college. Let's call him Tom because that was his name. Daniels. And we got into an argument one time.
First and last name.
It's the joke that never stops giving. And here's the thing. Tom would have a good sense of humor about all of this. Besides, he and his wife just bought a $2.75 million house in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's Whoops. Fine, everybody. But he and I got into an argument about advertising and bulimia and anorexia and sort of reinforcing this idea of what the ideal woman is or what you should look like. And his take was, you know, it's not advertising's fault. It's, you know, if somebody's insecure, it's their own problem. And my idea was that, but we keep perpetuating it. We keep, you know, glamorizing something that isn't necessarily attainable. And you were just talking about whether it's wealth or these products. Right.
Yeah. And I think that when you're young, I mean, obviously you don't have a strong sense of self yet.
Right.
And so that's when that advertising starts penetrating your psyche, saying like, if you have this lipstick or, I mean, even the doll study with like a black doll and a white doll, like which doll do you like? I mean, it's like, it's set in our, you know, eyes since we were little children, what is better for us constantly, you know? And so you're drawn to things, especially advertising, because it's especially with Instagram these days and how kids are connected all the time, that they feel like less because they don't have half the things that are being thrown at them.
I hesitate sometimes. I've been pulling, like I did a lot of selfies. As we know, I did something called selfish selfies. And one of the things that I was enjoying when I would do that was I was surprised at how much better I was feeling about myself, kind of controlling the way I do those, right? I can do a different angle. But then I realized I am putting out this image of my, you know, putting out this like best image, whether it's the filters or the makeup. You know, I'm getting older and I have kids. But it is hard to be honest in social media and obviously in advertising. People, you know, aren't necessarily honest. That was what I thought was fairly successful with the Dove campaign.
Yeah.
Was when they had women of all different ages and sizes, you know, and I thought that was a cool way to sort of approach saying we run the gamut of sizes, shapes, colors, all those things.
Right. And I think that actually in advertising these days, it's not when I was young where it was a large company owning it. You can go on Instagram and someone can sponsor or
right.
like promote a product, and they become famous for doing that, and they're just a regular person.
Exactly. Yeah. How are you able to bring in the communities outside of the East Side, outside of South Chicago, in order to, you know, because there is this disconnect when it comes to the segregated nature of our city.
Well, we have the van, so yes. We pick up kids. We also just go into like neighborhoods. So I am eyeballing a firehouse across from it's on Kedzie and Grand. It's across from the the new daily, I guess it's new, library. And I'm eyeballing that space. It's a firehouse, which is always perfect when you're across from a library, because libraries in communities are they're community centers. They're the place where you get warm, the place where you get cool, they're the place where you get the internet, sometimes where you use the bathroom. I mean, it's like libraries are big. And it's across the street, and you can get those places for a dollar. So I got to find out. I'm looking into that, but we're looking into Garfield Park and Humboldt Park.
Yes.
Because we noticed when we were in the detention center that what happens when the kids get out? We're not in the neighborhoods they live in, right? So South Chicago is one, but it's hard to move around on the south side. It's hard to move around on the west side. And so we want to be in different neighborhoods. So we move around. And also we're in tons of schools. So we reach kids through the school system. But we really want to be there after school, because that's the most important, crucial time for them.
Of course.
You know?
We are talking to Sarah Ward, who created Sky Art. You can go to skyart.org. She was introduced to our show by John O'Malley, regular contributor here at WGN Radio and WGN TV. He is a former deputy chief for the U.S. Marshals in the Northern District. And Scott, you and I are, and Todd, I want to find out a way to get more involved, because this is really, we keep talking about we need to come up with solutions, and it's time to stop talking and doing. And that's what you've decided to really jump in there with.
She does. That's for sure.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. Let's take a break here. We'll come back and continue our conversation on 720 WGN. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, and I'm so happy you're here. Yeah, I would never guess Tina something or another. What did you say, Scott? Tina Marie and
Square Biz.
Square Biz.
You know, my mom almost named me Scott. You'd be surprised how many people call me Scott without knowing my name. It's
really?
Crazy. Yeah.
It's those single syllable names, I think, is what it is.
You seem like a Scott. You could be a Scott.
Well, we have.
I'm not swole enough to be a Scott.
Yeah, you're pretty swole.
Yeah. That's Scott Santis, the editorial cartoonist of the Chicago Tribune and the regular contributor here at WGN Radio.
You see, fellas, ladies, this gentleman is ripped all the way from top to bottom.
By the way, Todd Belcore, the executive director for Social Change. We have John O'Malley, who is former U.S. Marshal, who was the deputy chief of the Northern District, and Sarah Ward, who has created a magical and incredible place for kids to express themselves at Sky Art. You can go to skyart.org. To that, Todd, and you can tell I've been in Springfield too, to the bill. to that, Scott just hiked the from rim to rim of the Grand Canyon.
I did.
Wow.
Is that right?
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
How many miles is that?
All the miles. 20,
every one of them. Yeah, 24.
Jeez. Dude's hiking marathons out here?
Yeah.
That's we walked it.
Yes,
it took
but still.
A long time.
Well, but how long?
It took 15 hours.
Wow. Yeah, that's a hike.
Yeah. No, we're talking about up and down. It's not just like walking down the street.
That's right.
Well, it's down and across. That was the easy part. And then that the last 9.5 are up. And that's the part that sucked.
Look at Ash is like, what? Yeah, he walked 15 hours.
Does everyone know how you minimized all that?
Yeah, so you're in good shape. We got to do some stair climbing.
Okay.
I've been trying to get back in shape. By the way, this is really happy. My happy thought for tonight, Patty, 6 hours of you. I finished last night's show just before tonight's show. Last night was so much fun, too. We had Steve and Johnny were on last night. You know, WGN is celebrating 95 years.
That's unbelievable.
Isn't that crazy? And I got to be here for six of that, 5 years full time. I don't even know how that happened. Sarah, we were talking about your career and how you had intended to go into advertising and really looked around and said, there's something else I could be doing. Not everybody takes a step back and is capable of that sort of presence. Do you remember what it was? I mean, it was just an aha moment for you to make that change?
I have so many of those, and it's like my secret talent to create aha moments with teens. So if you got a teen that doesn't know what she wants, send them my way.
Okay.
Because I can do it.
I like that.
I'm really good at figuring out, like, those pathways. You know, when you get a job and you're like, don't like that, next job, want the like. And then you just kind of, you move up that ladder and just keep all the things you like as you progress. Mm-hmm. And when I was working in New York, I was teaching kids in the Lower East Side. I was two professional artist assistants. I was a bartender. I worked at a dress shop. I did everything. But I also just realized this is, you know, the things I liked about my job teaching kids and being an assistant. And then I knew I wanted to go into art therapy because I saw, like, I wanted psychology and art, and I wanted it to be more rigorous, and I never wanted to be an artist. I always wanted to teach people. I just didn't want to really teach art. I wanted to teach people to be better people.
It's like that idea of teach someone how to fish, give someone a fish, and they won't go hungry, but teach them how to fish.
That's cute.
They'll never starve. I can't remember what it was.
Second only, second wow. only to Patty's inability to name music.
I love it.
There's so many I can't.
Something well-known mantra.
It's not even that. I you're right. I do it all the time. So I'm like no bars teaching. Held, no holds bar.
This is like a George W. Bush moment. This was amazing.
Something
like,
about fish.
It comes out like a word scramble.
You're
like,
eating.
Is this a riddle? What are we doing here?
I do that too.
Jumble.
I do.
Fishing, I'll get there eventually.
Teaching.
Hey, if you knew what I was talking about, we're halfway there.
All right. We all know what you're talking about.
Thank my favorite quote is, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Does anyone know who said that?
Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
It's on my wall at work.
Oh, man. Sarah, why Chicago? What led you here from St. Paul to San Francisco, then New York, and then Chicago?
So it's close to home, and it's a city. I like big cities. Yeah. I like the Midwest. I mean, honestly, New York, I never went to my friends' houses. We always met out, and I like being in people's spaces. I don't know if it's because I'm nosy, or I just like it feels homey.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I like that.
I just love that.
Great,
and
are you nosy?
Get it here. I am kind of.
Do you open
like,
the medicine
I like
cabinet?
People's... Oh, yeah, of course. I just love seeing people's style and sitting in their spaces as opposed to at a bar down the street from their house because their floor tilts, you know, which my friends did.
I have to get someone to clean my house and invite you over. Well, no, because my husband and I set out in life to be more social. We when we registered for our wedding, we got enough plates so we could have guests over, and we got a big table. And then, you know, things happen where we had kids and you know, I have a child with special needs. So it's just one of those things where our life isn't quite what we planned, but we adjust. And it sounds like you set out to do one thing and you let, you know, you kind of go, okay, well, this isn't quite what I thought, and I'll make what I need to have happen.
Yeah.
Next. Yeah.
Well, I think that everybody can do. I don't know if that's Pollyanna, but I really think that you can make your future happen. You just have to have someone help you do it.
When you made these decisions, were you all in? I mean, like when you thought, I want to go into art therapy, you just quit everything else and focused on that?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I didn't know NYU didn't have it because I think New York had so many connections. And then I found the Rush Medical Center and the School of the Art Institute had a cooperative program, and I thought that that's cool. I get to go to medical school and go to art school. I'm in.
Yeah.
And so I came here, but then I didn't realize that, you know, when you get a master's in a certain place, your resume really grounds you there. So I worked at the juvenile court with sexually abused victims for a year, and that gave me a lot of connections and ended up creating the art therapy position there at the probation department, which was the first in the country, by the way, that I started there. And that the resume I got here, I wouldn't translate to New York or San Francisco. So I was stuck. And here I am.
And the fact that you were able to stay grounded in a situation where you see so many kids who are having the worst day of their lives. You know, I mean, in particular, when it comes to violence, sexual violence, I mean, a lot of kids aren't able to articulate or even know what happened. And to help them guide them through that is so incredible.
Yeah, it's nice to be. I mean, I think that's a lot about the staying power too, because I have so many kids that come back and say, "Oh, you're still here," and I'm like, "Oh my God, I am." But it's really nice too. But it's really nice.
Yeah,
like, they can
is.
Come in, and it's like the attrition rate for teachers in the school by me is 42%. That means a kid has like more than four teachers in a course of a school year.
Wow.
And the average household moves twice a year, so being a stable presence in their life is therapeutic in its own right. So having having them be able to come in. I have kids come in and talk to me all the time. I mean, and just unload. I have that thing about me, too, that people tell, you know, tell me things. And it's really beautiful. It makes me feel really honored and special to think that I can provide that for them and be there.
You've built a relationship with John O'Malley, who's in law enforcement. Do you have other individuals from? Because there's, it's, you know, cynicism seems to be a go-to for a lot of people, regardless of what they do for a living. Are you able to build a relationship with the law enforcement community at SkyArt?
You know, it's funny. When I started in South Chicago, the kids used to drive down the street and shoot guns in the air like it was the Wild West. And I was like, wow. And this was when all the housing projects were up in Chicago. So this was,
sure.
You know, and I'd gone into almost all of them when I was a probation officer and an art therapist. And I was like, this is a different neighborhood. It felt different. It felt like the police weren't present in it. And they still, like, the cops will come in sometimes, but no, I'm just, they're there for the kids,
right?
Honestly. Right. And if they need help, I mean, obviously we're mandated reporters and we have to call, you know, when we think the kids are in danger.
Right.
But it's a beautiful situation. John actually had proposed for some kind of relationship to build or mentorship or even just an inspiration to say, like, here's a person that looks like you and this is the what kind of position
yeah.
they have. And
yeah.
Exposing them to that, like, an artist isn't sitting in front of a canvas. An artist could be a person who's doing lighting at the Lyric Opera.
They're yeah. living.
It could
yeah.
be a person who is a police officer and is a photographer or, you know, whatever it is that, yeah. that there's a myriad of opportunities within the arts.
Yeah. I mean, law enforcement gets that, you know, pigeonholed into that. No one ever believes me when I tell them that I belong to this. People, you okay, O'Malley? I'm like, no, seriously. It's like, look it up. It's a great program. We just did a thing on the north side at Arts on Elston over by Albany Park area. A friend of mine has a little studio there and brought people over there just to kind of, you know, it was really eye-opener for some people. It was great.
Well, that's why
great.
It's so important to have someone like you on the board to
yeah.
kind of bring a different voice
exactly.
to it. So it sounds less warm and fuzzy, and it's more actual, pragmatic, and helping people really change their lives.
I saw way too close and personal what happens in, you know, Austin, Lawndale, Inglewood, South Chicago. So many neighborhoods of good, really good people. And as Sarah mentioned about her art therapy to kids, small majority of the people get all the attention from the organization I belong to. And it's like, well, but what about all the other kids and other people are trying to do the right thing and do the right thing? They get zero attention. So when she told me what she did, I was like, wow, this sounds like a really, what can I do to find more about it? So
yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, I want to thank you, John O'Malley, for introducing us to Sarah Ward. Sarah Ward, thank you for all the great work that you do, and look forward to hearing more and having you on the show again. Whatever you need, we're here for you.
Love to.
As much
yeah,
as
yeah, get WGN involved and check out the Facebook page
yep.
and the position that's open for.
Oh, that's right. There's yeah. some jobs that are open as well.
Yes.
Yep.
Everyone can go to skyart.org too
yep.
to find out how to get involved.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Patty, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Of course, my pleasure. Quick break. Oh, you were wonderful. Wonderful. Quick break and then the news on 720 WGN. It is time to ask David. David Hochberg joins us in studio. You can go to his website, 56david.com. And if you have any questions about buying a house, getting a loan, it's a great time for
great
everything.
Time. Rates are down. You know, the world is ending, as I see every time I see Scott's caricatures and the Trib, you know, cartoons. I see the world is ending, and interest rates have come down to levels we haven't seen in over 12 months. Rates are in the high threes again, mm-hmm. low fours.
Wow.
So you might as well, as everything is falling apart, take advantage of these lower rates. you know, we have dysfunction, as everybody knows, in Washington on both sides of the aisle. People can't get along, and it's impacting the interest rates. The bond market has been sliding downward, which is a good news for interest rates, and interest rates are at 12 months lows. So where are we financing a ton of people?
And if it, this isn't true just of houses for personal property. I saw a business for sale in my neighborhood. The building is they're selling it for $200,000, and I was telling somebody that, and they were like, but in your mind you go, well, what would I do with that?
Well, the challenge is it's great that you could buy a building for $200,000, but you're going to have $15,000 to $20,000 in real estate taxes, and that's what's driving people out. And the people down Springfield, I'm not slamming the people in Springfield or our fine county elected officials that continue to raise taxes on us, because it's easy to raise taxes instead of like, okay, listen, you want to come to me and raise my taxes, that's cool. Tell me something where you're consolidating government or cutting government to make it more affordable for a homeowner or anybody that resides in Cook County to live in Cook County or in the state of Illinois. Because everybody's like, oh, homeowners are rich and homeowners are this, and if you own a home, you're rich. But what people don't realize is 60-some percent of the population own homes, which means 30-some percent of the population are renting homes.
Right.
And the people that are renting homes are renting the home from somebody that owns that home that they're renting.
Right.
So if you keep drilling the people that own the home that the 30-some percent are renting, then the people that are renting are going to pay more on a monthly basis. And it's simple math.
And the thing is, then the people who are renting will never be able to own either, because they're paying higher and higher rents.
And they're constantly, it's like running a marathon on a treadmill, and you can't get caught up. Yeah. And one of the greatest things that I started doing after advertising for 15 years on the radio is I started doing this year accumulation of what we've saved people. And I've changed my ad copy every single month. I just recorded the new ad today that'll start playing tomorrow. In May, we helped borrowers, listeners, take out over $953,000 of equity out of their home to pay off car loans, to pay off student loans, to pay off credit card debt, to pay off IRS tax liens, which reduced their monthly payment just in May alone, $19,000, close to $19,000 a month. And the cumulative total so far equals $888,000 that we've saved on an annualized basis. Listeners, it's going to be close to $2 million by the end of the year. Wow. This is what, I don't know why I'm having a coffee one day. I'm just like, my God, and I'm seeing these numbers that are coming in. I'm like, we need to add this up and get it out to let the listeners know so they're not afraid to call to use the and take advantage of these low rates.
People appreciate the two things he's saying here. One, it's kind of with all due respect moment, he says, I'm not blaming the legislators, but then kind of went all in on that, which I appreciate.
Well, yeah.
the second thing
there's
is, though,
plenty
truly,
of blame
though,
to go around.
No, but really, I mean, the second thing is, though, he's saying you can take money off your existing property and still save a lot of money and pay your bills.
Right.
So, I mean, there's really no downside by at least investigating, inquiring to see what opportunities are available.
Yeah.
We have a listener who's called in with a question.
Bring it,
It's another Todd. Hey, Todd, how are you doing?
Good.
Excellent.
Thanks, Todd.
Right, way to be concise there, Todd.
What do you want to ask, Todd?
I wanted to ask if you guys knew who Joseph Misfit was.
You got me.
Don't know?
No.
We're
getting set up for something. Who is Joseph Misfit?
Misfit. Okay. M-I-S-F-U-D.
You still have me stumped.
A little more information. May I call a lifeline?
Well, I mean, he was supposedly the guy who started it all. The reason that, supposedly Trump was colluding with Russia. So I just thought maybe you guys...
Okay. So anyway, what was we were saying about the legislators?
Did I spur that out, or did I miss something?
That is the weirdest phone call we've...
Just wait. The night's still early.
Yeah, no kidding. David, you bring in all the fun.
You bring in the fog and the...
Can
anyone appreciate the randomness of that?
Well, God bless. Todd, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. Yeah.
What rate do you have? And maybe we could help you get in line to save some money.
One of the questions I know that came up when you were on with Bill and Wendy was Wendy had gotten this mailer, right? Hey, Wendy, I know that you're paying this much. Because some of this information is public when it comes to...
It's all public.
Right, it's all public.
It's all public.
So then, folks can advertise and use your name and use your property value, where you live.
Can I explain that in a little more detail? So when you close a loan, it gets recorded on the county level, right? The county records it. Every county records it. What happens is there's aggregators out there. So there's information aggregators that go into the county and pull out the information that's public record. What, where you live, what your loan amount is, what the interest rate is, and then they send out letters, typically saying, hey, you just refinanced with Team Hochberg, and they use my name. So the people receiving the letter think they're getting a letter from me,
yeah.
And it's not from me, right? So say, hey, you could refinance. You just refinanced a $300,000 loan at 4.5%. Rates are down. Why don't you give us a call? And they're calling me like, why are you sending me this email? I'm like, I didn't. They're like, well, how, you know, and then they get all fired up.
Sure.
The challenge is, I used to advertise, and a lot of people used to advertise in the newspaper. The challenge with advertising interest rates in the newspaper is for print on Thursday, you have to get them rates on Monday, okay, right. In order or to go on Wednesday. You've got to get them rates 2 or 3 days ahead of time in order for it to go to print. It's just the way that the newspapers work back in the day when they were, you know, still printing newspapers. So if you want it in print, digital, it's different. Well, the challenge is rates could change 3, 4, 5, 6 times by the time that we submitted that ad to the newspaper until the time it prints. Okay, the same thing with the postcards.
Right.
You could send out a postcard saying, hey, yeah. You know, it takes, you know, you got to collate it. It's got to get through the mail. It could, you know, that could have been mailed 2, 3 weeks ago. And then Wendy, and I love Wendy, and she's like, well, I got this postcard. I said, it's crap. And she's like, well, how do you know? I'm like, because I do this for a living. Okay. I mean, that postcard was printed 3 weeks ago, and it finally made it into your mailbox. Now you've got this mailbox, you know, and it amazes me that people buy off on mailers. I'm like, have you ever heard of the company that sent the, you know, postcard? No. Have you ever spoken to anybody that at the company that sent the letter? No. Then how can you trust it? Well, I got a postcard. I'm like, what are you, do you mind? Right? Yeah. So
you should have it returned to sender. This postcard is crap.
You just have to be careful. You just have to be careful. You just have to be careful.
We have a question that just came in through the text screen. We're going to take it from the 847. When we come back on 720 WGN.
Is it Todd?
No, it's not Todd. Okay, no, I swear, it seems like a legit question.
Okay, good deal.
312-981-7200. You can text or call your legit questions, or otherwise. I mean, we'll find it amusing if you. But I have a dump button, so I wasn't sure where he was going to go with that. Thankfully, we do have another question coming in. 312-981-7200 with somebody who wants some help. It's Ask David. You can find him at 56David.com because the phone number is 855-56-DAVID. Again, go to 56David.com. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got you.
Chase Brown. Sorry.
Well done.
By the way, that's how I am in restaurants. I'll just randomly yell out musicians' names. I'm like, Rush! You know, people look at me like I'm crazy because I just all of a sudden know the song. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and we it's time. It's Thrifty Thursday, and it's Ask David. You can go to 56David.com to contact David Hochberg. You can also call him at 855-56-DAVID. And the phone lines are lighting up. The text screen is lighting up.
Can I just throw something else out there?
Yes.
That we set up an email address, confidential and private email address here at WGN Radio called AskDavid@WGNRadio.com that your listeners could send in emails. And what the goal of this segment is for your listeners and other show listeners to send their questions in so we could read them when I'm on your show and when I'm the other show so the listeners can learn from a voyeuristic way from other people's challenges and other people's questions that are afraid to ask the same question. And that's what this segment is all about that I talked to Todd about, you know, trying to develop is having a safe place to come to ask the tough questions that you think are crazy and ridiculous and are too embarrassed. But, you know, I get these questions all day long, every single day, and nothing shocks me. Well, I had a an interesting one today, but, you know, but nothing really shocks me. Okay, it might throw me for a loop, but then I get back on.
Wait. You got to tell us the one that shocked you.
Well, here.
He said safe place. Maybe he doesn't.
No. Okay. No, and I'll get to the tech. This is a great question. You know, an 80-year-old couple owns a condo here in Chicago. They have a home out of state, basically almost own the home free and clear. They have Social Security income, combined income, $50,000 a year. Okay, so I'm thinking, okay, you could do this, that, and the other thing. Reverse mortgage up here. Everything's great. And then he goes to me halfway through the conversation, 10, 15 minutes in, as I'm bumper to bumper on the outbound Kennedy to go to get my daughter from dance class. And he's like, well, we haven't made a mortgage payment in 2 years. I'm just like, well, dead stop.
That seems okay. Like a problem.
Well, it's a challenge, but it's not like the first time I've heard this. So I'm like, okay, here's what you got to do. You got to sell the condo here in Chicago and move to the state. And I don't want to get too specific, you know, in case people know this listener. And again, we're trying to help people, not embarrass people. So I said, you've got to sell this place. And he's like, well, you know, I figured I could wait it out. I'm like, you got $20,000-$30,000 worth of attorney's fees. You haven't made a mortgage payment in 2 years. What the bank's not telling you is they're charging you foreclosure fees.
That's right.
And when you sell the place, you just lost another 20, 30 G's worth of equity, and they have a ton of equity. So long story short, I'm like, buddy, I'm telling you, you got to get out of that condo, move into the home that you own basically almost free and clear.
Right.
When you get down there, he's like, well, I got this thing coming up. I'm like, you know, he's like, I got to come back to Chicago. I'm like, listen, the transportation, the airfare, the transportation, the lodging are going to be cheaper than what you're not paying in a mortgage right now. So dump the condo. So after a while, and I had to say, and I
love
I said,
his energy.
No, and I had to say it literally six times. I'm like, listen, I'm not getting anything out of this, right? I'm going. It was a nice day. My sunroof open. I got a little tan. It was great. First day, you know, it was 80 degrees. I'm talking to this people. I'm like, listen, you got to take care of yourself and you got to function. And I know what happens is people get into a paralyzed state. And they can't function. They can't maneuver. And I'm like, sell the damn condo. Call a realtor who you're friends with and their buddies with. Sell the condo. Move into the house. And when you get down to the house that's got a ton of equity, we'll take a reverse mortgage out there.
Right.
So you can wipe out, you know, whatever mortgage you have there. They owed a couple of 10, 15, 20 grand down there. And I said, that's what you do. Right. So I'm coming in on a 40,000 foot overview. Right. In the Black Hawk helicopter, you know, monitoring all the troops on the field, and they're in hand-to-hand combat and they can't see what's going on.
Right.
But I'm just like, here's what's going on. And this is what this segment's all about, to help people overcome their challenges.
Which leads us to our first caller. Jenny has a question for you. Hi, Jenny. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you guys?
Very well. Great to hear from you. What do you want to ask, David?
Great. My question is, my husband was recently diagnosed with cancer and is going to be going through pretty aggressive treatment.
Okay.
He is the breadwinner in the family. He's the one that's handled our mortgage.
Right.
So I'm kind of jumping on the ball to get ahead of the game, and I'm wondering, are there programs within the mortgage company or other, you know, other companies to look into? We know he's not going to be working for about 3 to 4 months.
Right.
Do mortgages offer deferment?
Yeah.
If someone said interest only, maybe payments to help us at least get by while no income is coming in
sure.
for the time being.
Well, number one, I'm sorry to hear about your husband, and I hope he has a speedy recovery. But let me I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions here, Jenny. How much do you owe on your first mortgage?
We are at, I think, about $179,000 left to pay on our home.
Is it the only mortgage you have on your house?
Yes, it is.
What's your home worth?
$232,000
Okay, got it. All right. So, what rate do you have now?
That I do not know.
Okay.
Because, like I said, he handled all of that.
Right.
So.
Well,
yeah.
And that's why I asked you this question, because medical challenges are going to happen every single day. All right. And what the spouse that takes care of the finances has to have a serious conversation with the other spouse that doesn't take care of it, in case something like this. Jenny's husband has cancer, so Jenny's not left in a fog while she's got 4,000 other things going on in her mind. And you need to have this drilled down. Okay. So, what you can do is, if your house is worth $300,000-$400,000, okay, or more, you really don't have a whole ton of equity there. But the best thing to do is to try to get a line of credit for other people out there that have equity in their home for emergency reasons, is to take out a line of credit when you don't need the line of credit. I always tell people that. Well, why do I need a line of credit? Well, you need a line of credit when you don't need the line of credit. So when challenges like this come up with Jenny and her husband, they have something to as a backup, a line of credit for people that don't know what the heck I'm talking about is a checkbook against your house that you could tap into for emergency reasons. Your best option right now, Jenny, is to get ahead of this and contact your mortgage servicer, okay, the person you write the check to. Tell them what's going on. Be completely honest with them and say you need some help during these next 4 or 5 months, right? And then it's not like you're lying to them. If they ask for a doctor's note, and it's as ridiculous as it sounds, you can provide a doctor's note. But you and other people have to get ahead of this before you miss the first payment, okay? And that's what you got to do. And we could talk more about that. I know we got a hard break coming up, but it's a great call because I work with borrowers all the time who have an enormous amount of debt. Go back to the $19,000 a month that we just saved listeners in May. That goes a ton, that helps a ton, and goes a long way in getting people in a position that, God forbid, something like this happens, a financial challenge or a medical challenge, they're in a better position to handle it. So so contact your service provider of the mortgage, you know, the company that you write the checks to, and get into their health department, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jenny.
Speedy recovery for your husband.
Yeah. We wish you both the very best. Thank you. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, after the news, I promise we're going to get to the calls. We also have a text from the 708, the 347, the 815, and the 847. So a lot of texts coming in. More after this on 720 WGN. Okay, my favorite moment just now is the music started playing was Ashley Byham tilting her head back going, let's see if Patty knows this one. And I should have. David Hochberg is going with Rush. Is the answer Rush?
Right?
Would that be correct?
All right, there you go.
It's the only
1980
one
something. Main East High School. Yep.
That is it.
There you go.
Delta 88. Two-door Delta 88.
Nice.
With the red roof, black. Oh, it was great.
Stylish.
Yeah,
David Hochberg is in studio with us.
He's chilling down here.
My mom's car. Yeah, it's really styling. Cruising with my Ray-Bans on.
He's getting
on.
That dreamy look in his eyes.
Yeah, when you start going beyond the song and naming the description of garages.
Top Gun. Really sunglasses, aviators. Yeah,
wearing Cavaricci's. What do you wear? What kind of jeans?
It was parachute Jordache. Pants, but they had to kill like two or three parachutes to make a pair of pants get around me. So I didn't really look too.
I loved parachute pants.
I couldn't.
They were
them.
The most comfortable pants.
Dolphin
in
shorts.
The 20th century.
Dolphin gym shorts. Remember those? The jogging shorts.
No,
I've never heard anyone say kill parachutes before.
Yeah, well, you have to sacrifice
kill two or three parachutes.
You have to sacrifice a lot of nylon to get around my tuchus back in the
All right,
day.
We got a lot of people with
Bring
questions for
go.
Ask David. Scott Santis, Todd Belcourt joins in the studio for Ask David. It's Thrifty Thursday. You can go to 56david.com to contact David. You can also call 855-56-DAVID. But on the line with us right now is Gary, who has a question. Hey, Gary, what do you want to ask?
Well, hi, Patty.
Been a while. Yeah, it's been a while, my friend. How have you been?
Well, not really good. Let's keep that out of the conversation right now.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, it's okay. It ain't your fault. It's 60 years of smoking is what it is.
Oh.
I wanted to ask David now, and bear with me now. I got to do this slowly. These timelines are approximate. Approximately 4 years ago, I took I got to turn the speakerphone off. Please, wait.
Okay, David.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
we got you, Gary.
That's much better.
Okay.
Go ahead.
About 4 years ago, I took a home equity loan out for $20,000.
Okay.
Because I needed to make a purchase that said I wanted to pay cash for it. I didn't want to make a loan on it. And it was at 4% fixed rate. Approximately a year later, there was another purchase I wanted to make. And the hope was I was going to make the purchase and then turn around and sell my original purchase, but I had to do the first purchase first. So I took out a home equity line of credit.
Okay.
So that was all of a sudden, now I'm at a variable rate. Started at 4%, just as my original one did. And then I made the purchase, but then the other one, the other purchase that I wanted to get rid of fell through. So now I got the double purchase, and I got this home equity line of credit that since then has gone up to 5.5%.
Right, because it's tied into the prime interest rate, and prime has gone up. So you owe $40,000 against your house, Gary, or more?
A couple thousand more. You know, it's about 42, I think.
Okay.
And now I'm wondering, I want to get back to a fixed rate loan. I don't know what the rates are now to go back to a fixed rate, but it would be like double of what my original rate was. But can I get that? Because otherwise, I don't want to be up to like 7.5%, 8.5% in a few years.
What can you afford to pay down on your loan, Gary?
I mean, cash right now that I have.
On a monthly basis, what can you pay down?
Well, I've been paying down about $450, $500. I can go $500 a month
okay.
Right now.
How much is your home worth, Gary?
I'm hoping about 3.25, or maybe, you know, 5 or 10 there.
Right. Is it a house or a condo or a townhouse?
It's a house.
And how old are you?
72.
God bless you. Is it only you in the house, or is there a co-borrower?
No, I have my wife with me.
And how old is she?
It can get a little, you know, off the air, I would tell you a little bit more, but no, my wife and me, we are the only two, residents, and neither one of us work.
What's your wife's name?
What, really?
Okay.
My wife's name is Louise.
Okay, so it's you and Louise, and you're both in your 70s, right?
Yes.
Okay, and you have a $325,000 single family house, and you owe $40,000.
Well, that's the equity loan. I mean, I still have a mortgage.
How much do you owe on the mortgage?
Just under 170, maybe somewhere around 167.
Okay, and what type of income do you have coming in?
Just my pension.
How much is that? What's the total income you have coming in on a monthly basis?
Okay, let's figure that. Clear or gross? Because I don't know the gross.
How much do you have coming in on a monthly basis?
$5,500.
And are you escrowing your taxes on the 170 or no?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what the rate is on the 170?
Well, what I'm paying now, it changes every year. I think I'm right now I'm paying about almost $1,500.
$1,500. And how much of the $1,500 is taxes and insurance?
Almost half.
Almost half? Okay. Are you a veteran at all?
Yes.
Are you service-connected disabled at all? Do you have any...
Service-connected disabled? No. I'm a veteran, and I'm also a retired 30-year CPD.
Right.
And I've got third stage lung cancer right now, and my wife's disabled.
I got you. But and that's horrible, and we're going to try to help you here. So your best bet, right, $200,000, follow me here. Okay, you need about $200,000, $210,000 to pay off everything, right? Your first and second together is about $210,000, right?
40 and, that's
okay.
Right, yeah.
So how would you like to turn that payment into an $850 to $900 payment without taxes and insurance, so you don't got to worry about the up and down elevator ride that you're doing on the 40 that you took out to make whatever purchase you had to make that didn't work out as best as you thought it was? If I could turn that payment into an $850 to $900 payment, would that benefit you and your wife, Louise?
Well, that would give me about the same payment that I'm paying now on my original mortgage. Is right. That correct?
Right. But you would eliminate the variability and the uncertainty with the 40 that seems to have you stressed out.
Okay. And then...
Would that increase my length of terms?
Yeah.
Because right now, Gary, with the condition of your health... Right, and your age, in my professional opinion, the number one through 400 things you should be concerned about is a monthly payment. Right? You got enough, right? You should be concentrating on your health, not on this up and down elevator ride on the second. So if we could convert the second and take that stressor off you and put you into an $850 to $900 payment and take care of Louise, if God forbid something happened to you, would that put you in a better state of mind?
Oh, sure, sure. Okay. But is there also a possibility of reversing that, you know, those reverse mortgage things?
Sure, but
I don't know if that, I don't know anything about that.
Well,
but
I'm going to tell you.
Help also.
I'm going to tell you right now that 210 against the 325, you're at about that 60%, okay? On a 70-year-old, I love reverse mortgages. I think they're fantastic. When my mother was alive, I tried to get my mother and my father into one. Right, doctor takes his own medicine. I think they're fantastic. The challenge that you have is that at it's based upon 100-year life expectancy, and the value of your home based upon the amount of money that you owe. You don't have enough equity in your home. I don't believe so, just on paper here, to qualify for a reverse mortgage. I think they're fantastic, and if you do qualify for it, then that is the definite direction that I would recommend to you. And we do those, and it's the most satisfying next to a VA loan. The reverse mortgage is the most satisfying loan that we do because we're typically helping experienced homeowners out of a precarious situation and eliminating a payment, which would help you save $800 to $900, and that payment gets deferred on your mortgage. So what I would love to have the opportunity in the morning, because you should be in bed right now resting up and getting healthy, is to talk to you and Louise about seeing if you qualify for a reverse mortgage. And if not, then plan B would be to consolidate your first and second loan, take the stressor off your life so you could concentrate on taking care of your health. Does that sound like a plan?
For one, I'm going to be tomorrow morning. I'm going to be doctor all thing all day. Okay. I don't know what's going to happen.
That's
but,
fine.
Is a VA loan? Would that help me out anywhere?
Yeah, it could. If you were service connected disabled, you wouldn't have to pay the upfront funding fee. Then it would definitely be a benefit. But there are other products out there that you could get into and not have to pay the funding fee, like a regular Fannie Mae Freddie Mac loan. Okay, because right now, Gary, the most important thing, again, in my professional opinion, is the payment. Okay, you have two challenges from what you're telling me here. Number one is the payment. Number two is the stressor of the second, which is what you opened the conversation with, which means it was a topic. It was a top of mind. Right, that's the number one thing. Okay, so
money's coming in. I don't owe any money. My credit rating is like over 800.
Okay,
and But the whole thing is, I'm afraid this thing's going to keep on going. I don't know how we're going to handle it.
Gary, I understand you're under a lot of pressure, right? And that's why I identified the pressure right out of the box. And I'm going to try to eliminate that pressure by rolling it into the first and second loan into one loan so you don't have to worry about it anymore. Okay, you have stage 3 cancer, you're on oxygen, and we're going to take care of you. Okay, we're going to take care of one thing that I can take care of, which is your financial challenge that you have, which is eliminating the second loan, combining the first and the second, reducing the payment, taking the stress off of you and Louise, okay?
You're my man.
All right.
Is it okay? What's the latest I can call you?
You could call me. It's already midnight. I'll be back here with Cochran at 7 in the morning.
So oh,
you
boy.
Can call,
what?
You can call, yeah, I'm gonna roll up under a sales desk and take a nap.
I got a couch in my office.
I mean, I'm going to be tied up with actors.
It's okay. Okay.
Gary, call me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 855-56-DAVID. Okay? Any time of the day, night, weekends, it doesn't matter. 855-56-DAVID, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
All right, Gary. Get some rest, Gary. All right, take care. We've got a bunch of texts I have to get to when we come back from this break. And
blow through the commercials. We've got people to help. I'm sure the sales department will understand.
We'll be fast. We'll be fast. It'll be painless after this on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. I have got to make sure we get to these questions for Ask David. David Hochberg joins us in studio answering all your questions. You can go to
56david.com is the website.
Yes.
855-56-DAVID is the phone number. And we have a special private confidential email set up here at WGN that our listeners could go and send an email. And we will take those emails in addition to the calls, in addition to the texts, and read them on air so other listeners can learn and get the help and advice and education that they need from other listeners' questions. So excellent. Please go to askdavid@wgnradio.com to submit your email questions.
And at the from the 847 on our text screen, can I be considered a first-time home buyer after a certain amount of years of not owning a home? And I'd like to add to the question, I have a fair amount of debt. I pay the monthly fine, but is there a way to roll my debt into a loan if I can obtain one?
Okay. So the two-part question. The yes. First part is you are considered, everybody's considered a first-time home buyer if you have not owned a home in the past 36 months. So for some reason, somebody has come up with that definition, and that's the definition. So if you once owned a home but have not owned a home in the past 36 months, you are now considered officially a first-time home buyer again. Why? Okay. I have no idea, but that's just the rule. can you roll... that's a challenging question because if you miss payments already, it sounds like whoever sent that in said that I'm late on the payments, which means your credit is severely damaged. So that's a multiple layer there. Here, to answer that question, this, if you have money in the bank, it is better, and I will stand by this, and you can challenge me all you want, and you'll be wrong, but here's the deal. It is much better to buy a home with less down and no credit card debt with a higher credit score than with credit card debt and a larger down payment. Because everybody's like, well, I hate PMI. I'm going to save all this money. And then they jack up their credit cards. And by jacking up your credit cards, your credit scores come down.
Right.
And when your credit scores come down, your interest rate goes up because it's based upon a risk-based program, right? So the higher the credit score, the lower the rate. The lower the credit score, the higher the interest rates will cost you more money. So it is always better, listeners out there, to take the money that you have in your bank account and put less down on a home, go with PMI, pay off all of your debt, your credit scores will come up, you will qualify for a lower rate, and your monthly payment will always be lower without buying a home with credit card debt. Because for every $10,000 that and your typical listener is carrying about $30,000 worth of credit card debt. Okay, it used to be 10 to 15, right? Now that's not, I mean, that's like double A ball. Oh. I talked to a guy today. Okay, retired. $70,000 worth of credit card debt. Wow. Okay, now that's what we're seeing. He's in his 70s. He was injured on the job. Him and his wife have got Social Security coming in. They live in a $300,000 home. They have $130,000 mortgage and 70 G's worth of credit card debt. We're going to save them $2,000 a month. So I'm telling folks, listeners, please, it is always better to use the money you have for the large down payment to take that money out of the down payment, pay off your credit card debt, that your credit scores increase, you will qualify for a lower rate and qualify to buy a bigger home.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Hope that there helps. 847. 815 says, I've lived in my home for 18 years without missing a payment. I pay 7%.
Ooh.
And I'm a 1099. Have regulations been eased at all for 1099?
Yes. They are programs out there for self-employed individuals who have very creative accountants, or they're very creative themselves when they do their tax returns, which is all legal, to use bank statement loans in order to get, we could use personal deposits if you're self-employed, in order to get borrowers' loans based upon bank statements. So, right. Yes.
7% is a little high.
little. We have different definitions of little. That's a lot high.
Significant.
Yeah. Please give us a call to see if we can help you. The consultation's free, 855-56-DAVID, and we'll take a look at your tax return to see if we could get some more money out of that you might not think that we could get, or we'll take a look at the bank statement loans and recalibrate that loan. You've been in a 15 years at 7%. Even if we could take that number, and I will bet you a steak dinner at Ishnala, you know.
Ooh, Brandy Old Fashions.
Brandy Old Fashions overlooking Mead Lake or whatever
that's
it is. You know, that we could take that 15-year fixed loan, extend it out 30 years, maybe pay off some debt, and save that texter a ton of money.
Excellent. From the 708, my sister and brother-in-law have a ranch house in Will County.
Yep.
In Shanahan, Illinois. The ranch house is a three-bedroom with an unfinished basement. Their taxes are almost $10,000.
Crazy.
My sister and brother-in-law were surprised. Do you think that they're being charged way too high for their property taxes? That's Dave.
The general answer to that question is, do I think everybody in Illinois is being charged way too much? The answer is yes.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Shanahan, listen, what you need to do is, is get a hold of, you need to get a hold of the assessor and either go to one of those classes that nobody knows what the hell they're talking about, or hire a good real estate tax appeal guy or gal that will appeal your taxes and take a portion of what they save you. Okay, so $10,000 for a 3-bedroom ranch in Shanahan is a little mashuggy. Okay, it's not a little. That's a lot mashuggy. That's crazy. Okay, and again, I'm not going to get into the tax thing here, but you should have on Jack Franks, okay, the president of the McHenry County Board, right? And then bring in Tony Preckwinkle and let him sit side by side and let Jack school Tony on what he did in McHenry County to cut taxes by 10% a year.
Okay? Was it consolidated municipality?
Yes.
Yes.
He eliminated county board seats. Mm-hmm. And then when the Forest Preserve District of whatever came in with the budget 10% higher, he said, thank you for presenting the budget. Now go back and figure out a way to come back and take 10% off instead of asking for a 10% raise. That's what we need to do. We need to get our financial house fiscal because we're driving people up. People, $10,000 on a 3-bedroom ranch.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I'm sorry. I did a little. I went off the rails there. It's thinking. You know what though? I do it every day, and I see it, right. and I see what it's doing to property values. Okay, I saw a $800,000-$900,000 home in Lincolnshire. Okay, drop to $600,000 in value because the real estate taxes went from $11,000-$12,000 to $18,000. Okay, so for every $525 $100,000 worth of mortgages costs about $525. So every time you raise real estate taxes $6,000, okay, a year, you just eliminated $100,000 worth of property value off of people's homes. Okay, I do this for a living. I see it every day. The elected officials are like, oh, yeah, let's just jack it up a little more. Let's jack this up a little more. I can understand the gas tax thing, right, because our roads are falling apart. You want to take 18 cents? I'm not too happy about it, but you know what? I'm tired of blowing rims on our crappy streets. Okay, I understand that. I'm willing to pay that. But real estate taxes,
yeah.
We're driving people out of the state. It's crazy.
From the 347, David, would you hire an attorney to try to get the property tax lowered? Is it
yes.
worth it?
Yes, it's definitely worth it because what I just explained is that the property tax attorney takes a portion of the money that they save you. And right. again, I do this for a living. I don't have time to start looking at appraisals and doing all that stuff. If they can save you money, they take a piece and you get a bigger piece of what they save. So definitely hire a real estate tax attorney.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that our very first segment of Ask David has gone wildly successful.
Yeah, thanks.
That was outstanding.
David!
You need to get some rest, my friend, because you're coming back. What time are you doing Cochran's show?
I'm scheduled to be on Cochran 7:30. So I'm going to be back here at 7.
All right, go get some rest.
Yes, thanks for having
me. And we'll have you back in 2 weeks from tonight.
Yeah, on the 20th.
On the 20th.
Please go to askdavid@wgnradio.com. That's the easiest way for WGN listeners to go and submit their questions. And again, it'll be non-threatening. It's confidential. It's private. And we will help other listeners learn from the questions that you submit. So please help us build this into something that we would like to build it into, which is huge.
And we will also have this available as a podcast so that you can have
that'd be great.
And to share with listeners who want to learn from the conversation that we had tonight. Thank you, David. Be safe on the way home.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, of course. It's Ask David. You can also go to 56david.com or call 855-56david.com. But of course, go to askdavid@wgnradio.com to submit your questions for the next segment of Ask David. Ashley Byhun has a smile on her face because she sees me bopping my head to the music. She's like, "Ah, oh, Patty has no idea who's singing this."
Is that what you think she's thinking?
Yeah, Ashley, a little bit, yeah. Because otherwise, I would have screamed. She would have seen me be like, "Oh, it's da, da, da." And I didn't.
Yeah, would have had a eureka moment for sure.
Right? Was it Hall & Oates? Is that what you guys said it was? Yes, it's Hall & Oates. All right, then. I don't doubt you for a moment. That's Scott Santis, who knows that was Hall & Oates. He's the editorial cartoonist.
I knew something.
You know lots of stuff. He's the cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, regular contributor here at WGN Radio, a host as well of his own podcast.
Yeah, the Prickly City Podcast.
Excellent. And you'll hear us tomorrow on Mincing Rascals as soon as we record it. And Elif Garris, the extraordinary producer of the podcast and the John Williams Show, puts that up. Of course, the extraordinary producer this evening is Ashley Byhun. If you call and want to join the conversation, conversation. It's her voice you'll hear on the other end of the phone. If you're nice to her, maybe we'll hear from you. And Todd Belcore, the executive director for Social Change, you are you're always helping people out who are trying to change the world. And tell us a little bit about American Dream and this campaign that you're helping bring attention to.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. Miss Ola Mae Prince Adams is the grandmother of one of my best friends, Dr. Anthony Williams, and she dedicated her life to not only making a way for her grandchildren and her children, but also went above and beyond to make sure other people had access to opportunity. And when the family came to us about some way to really attribute some sort of campaign or effort to really honor her legacy in her passing, we thought the best way to do that was to make sure our own efforts to ensure people had access to the American Dream were attributed to her. So it's available online, it's available on our website. It's the Ola Mae Prince Adams Campaign.
Okay.
And it's committed to advancing the American Dream, which really means everyone should have access to basic opportunity, housing, jobs, education. And we've been fighting every day to make sure those opportunities are made available for people.
And again, you can go to the Facebook page, is Mrs. Ola Mae Prince Adams. That's Olamae Prince Adams. And I'm going to click the donate button right now because you have a long way to go to that $10,000 that you're trying to get to.
Thank you. And it's available on, of course, socialchange.site or at Shy Social Change, CHI Social Change. Everyone outside of Chicago would be like, Shy, S-H-Y. No, I'm sorry. Shy, short for Chicago.
Yeah, I love that you're doing this. And a lot, tell folks a little bit about what the work is that you do with Social Change and not just, you know, the work that you do in Springfield and St. Louis and D.C., but really starting to work around the world as well.
That's right. So what we do is we work to meet people where they are in the community. Like we were talking about earlier with Ms. Ward about going to different communities and really doing a needs assessment, but providing direct services and assistance. People are less able to tell you about some of the deeper things they're dealing with if they're hungry, if they're dealing with struggling to get their lights turned back on. So you meet people where they are and give them food. People without clothing, give them clothing. And then create a conversation, a space where people can talk more deeply about some of the systemic issues that they're dealing with. And in those instances, we create a community platform that we then advocate for. And this isn't something that we just do locally, we do internationally. And it's really an opportunity to hear people tell their stories and making sure those stories are resonating and amplified and heard in the halls of power. And whatever laws or systemic reforms can result, reflect the stories that are being told on the ground.
My goal is to participate more fully with Social Change and also to hopefully submit something for your film festival.
Yes.
That's my goal for 2020. Tell folks about the International Film Festival that you host here in Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York.
That's right. So we have our film festival is really at the intersection of storytelling and activism. And we receive films from all over the world and different art pieces as well, documenting injustice in all of its forms. So it's not, do you have something just relating to this or this content? All content's welcome. All means of representation of that content is welcome. And the goal is to provide just a platform and an experience for people to see and feel injustice in a different way and then be activated and inspired in such a way that they want to get involved in movements to do something about them. So we've provided that experience in Chicago, New York, and L.A., Chicago particularly at the end of September, New York in the middle of October, and L.A. at the beginning of November. And the goal is simple, to bring in more soldiers for change and also have a good time.
They did a fashion show last year, Scott, my friend Heather Lally and I went to go see at the DuSable Museum. And not just the incredible fashion that was on display, but also women and men of all different, again, we talked about this earlier, of all different shapes and sizes, and showing how, you know, the way you carry yourself is impacted by what kind of art you wear.
Right.
And such an extraordinary fashion designer that was doing that fashion show.
Yeah, Duvall.
Absolutely. So good.
Thank you. The House of Duvall, he does some incredible work. He actually was the fashion guru responsible for outfitting the Mandela family for a period of time in South Africa. So he has an incredible resume.
So when is this film festival?
September 27th through 29th in Chicago, October 12th in New York, and November 2nd in L.A.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask where we can find out about it.
Yes.
You can find out more information at socialchange.site. socialchange.site, but also in all social media outlets at CHI Social Change, CHI Social Change. And of course, we have all sorts of updates, but we really want people to submit their films. And you can do all that through the website and your work and how you want to get involved. We, of course, We love volunteers, but we do work directly in the community, whether it be feeding the homeless or providing hygiene products to those who are without. I mean, there's nothing that we don't do as it relates to helping community members, but the goal is to really affect the overarching structures responsible for the things we see in the street. Fix the housing issues so more people have access to housing, not just say, oh, they're homeless people. Fix the issues that make it possible for so many people dealing with hunger, not just saying, maybe we should give them some food. So we can make sure more people are in a position to enjoy life and have a good quality of life.
Are you having the film festival at the DuSable Museum again?
We are. We are.
I love
the DuSable Museum
there.
Of African American History right here in Chicago's Hyde Park area. And
gorgeous.
It's a beautiful facility, and we'd love for everyone to take part and come on out.
Outstanding. Scott also has some work that I want people to know about that's being featured in the Hamilton exhibit.
Yeah.
Ooh. I heard you on Sunday with Brian Noonan. I'm like, you know, I have Scott. It's because we get into this routine of having our conversations and I forget to interview you.
Well,
so tell us a little. Well, no, but still. I mean, it's the same thing with Scott. With Todd, I was thinking we've, you know, gone through the show and I haven't given listeners an opportunity to know about the extraordinary work that he's doing as well as you. And I talked to you when you were in D.C. and you were working on this and you were like, I'm locked in a room and I've got to get this done.
Yes, it was true. The deadlines just all of a sudden hit us, and I was in D.C. A friend of mine's father was being interred at Arlington, which was a really tremendous thing to experience. But the rest of the time I was there, Janine and I were thinking, we'll be able to take in the sights and we'll go to the museums and we'll do this.
How did that go?
I got up at 6:30 in the morning, drew until 3 o'clock the next morning, two nights in a row. And then the next one worked a little few more hours. We went for a walk. That was nice. And then, it's the Federalist and anti-federalist debate for the Constitution, that the hall where you go through there. And so how fun is it? You're a history nut. I'm a history
dork. I'm a history dork.
Oh, it's a dork. I got to caricature not just Alexander Hamilton, but James Madison.
Oh, wow.
Patrick Henry and Samuel Adams. And it was just so fun. I got to draw, because Samuel Adams talked about, you think these are seeds of freedom, but they actually will be attacked by canker worms. And I'm going, canker worms? Yes!
What a great visual. Yes.
So I draw a canker worm actually eats Patrick Henry and spits him out. How many times in your life are you going to be able to do that?
Never. I'm never going to do that. I love that.
Yeah, so that's it's a three-tiered debate, three-section debate. And something I learned that I didn't know before. Did you know Alexander Hamilton opposed the Bill of Rights?
I only learned that from you on Sunday on Brian Noonan's
Isn't
show. What was his, was there some background for that? What was
he
his
He thought
stance?
The Constitution was enough. We don't need any more laws. This is plenty. Once you start enumerating people's rights or giving them their rights, the government can then take them away.
Okay.
That was his argument. And James Madison was behind him 100% until that. He's going, yeah, you go.
Wait,
what?
I wish everyone could see his face, though.
Oh, it's great to draw it. And so I, like, a lot of times I have, you know, and then Patrick Henry comes back and says, we got to have a Bill of Rights. And he pulls out a mic and then he pulls out a second one. So it's a double mic drop.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. imagine, I mean, that's the thing is, you think about democracy and this idea that they were all trying to formulate. They were all trying to, and they had these arguments. They debated. They, you know, went back and forth on what was going to entail, and, you know, whether it came down to slavery or separating from the crown, and you know, it's not.
And none of it's nice, by the way.
None of it's nice.
Right. Yeah, it's not like, my dear sir, I tend to take umbrage with what you say, and I disagree with it. No, no. No.
Cankerworms, people. Cankerworms.
Cankerworms. Release the cankerworms!
Give me liberty or let me get eaten by this cankerworm.
Which is actually a name, by the way, because I'm sure people out there are wondering. It's an inchworm. That's what they called them back then, which are literally, well, an inch long.
An inch
long.
Okay.
But they eat the roots of plants. That's why this is bad.
Which would then, you know, chop off all the nutrition that needs to feed
and destroy
the
freedom.
Oh.
Sorry, that was a strong leap. I wasn't quite ready for that.
and the Hamilton exhibit is going on for quite a while. I've heard it's going to take like 72 semis.
Yes.
To move the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah, it's massive. I think it's 20,000 square foot. A standalone building they put out there in Northerly Island. Tickets are available until September. I'm going to say 8th, but that's probably wrong.
Okay.
But they're available till September-ish. Okay. And
and you are featured in the hallway of pro and
yeah, the Federalist and, Hall,
the Federalist
which is very
Hall.
Cool. I yes. mean, it was like because you'd have these conference calls and. You know, they'd say, well, we're going over the script, we're going over the storyboards. Like, yeah, Lin-Manuel really liked your work. I'm like going, well, okay, that's great. Any changes he suggested? No. But inside me is this guy going, squee! This is how Lin-Manuel likes my work.
That is so cool.
Well, he played it off well. Even now, I was like, oh, it's pretty indifferent to that.
Being all cool about being in the Hamilton exhibit?
No, it's wonderful. It was. It's very flattering, and it's being seen by millions of people. So, yeah, that's kind of awesome.
Well, in a time when cartoonists are being undervalued and beyond that, they're being asked
laid off, yes.
At prominent newspapers across the country.
Yeah, we just lost two more last week. Gatehouse decided to eviscerate all cartoonists from its staffing. So we lost a cartoonist in Columbus. We lost another cartoonist in Augusta, Georgia. We lost another one in Savannah, Georgia.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're down to like 23 of us now in the country, which you would call a staff cartoonist.
The thing is that it's such a crucial part of expression when it comes to the First Amendment.
Yeah, but I had an old editor who I loved. He was actually great, and he would jokingly say, yeah, but they're expensive and they're a lot of work.
A lot of work in one sense. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, columnists and cartoonists, it's your business. It's your work to
yes,
be contentious.
Say radio personalities may fall.
I don't know.
No, you're a dream.
Well, and you also have the unique gift of making something so complex, so digestible in a way
exactly.
that people would never
appreciate
in any other way.
In this day and age, when people are reading less,
yeah.
and they truly are, less and less, a quick, pithy, you know, well-executed cartoon you think would be something they'd go, oh, that's perfect for this market. No.
Yeah, really.
So it sort of explains why.
In fact, you wonder what a paper full of cartoons would do. I think people would buy that and they'd be like, oh, okay, I got all my news and I flipped through this in 20 minutes.
I'm distracted because there's something I meant to send you a while ago. I was doing a corporate show in Kohler, Wisconsin, and they at the Kohler... It's a wonderful hotel. It's the destination, but each room has whether it's a literary giant or somebody who's contributed
oh, cool.
in some way. And so the room I was given, I can't believe I didn't send this to you because I meant to, was Thomas Nast.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
And in the room they have a lot of his work. And I, yeah. So here I'll have to share it with you.
Yes, please. Oh my God, you're kidding.
So there's a Thomas Nast room, and I'm like, how? And I can't believe I did it. This was back in March, and I took all these photos to send to you, but I was so busy that weekend. Plus, it was a really nice hot tub in my room because it's a Kohler hotel. But it just seemed weird to send you stuff while I was like, I'm going to spend some time.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like the Madonna Inn a little bit. Are you familiar with this?
No, it's the Madonna Inn.
They have a lot of theme rooms.
Oh.
It's where couples go and do couple
no,
things.
No. This is how hot is the Thomas Nast room?
I don't know, man.
I'm not familiar.
His take on James Blaine was pretty racy.
He put simply, Thomas Nast was the father of American political illustration. The brilliant, often biting drawings that flowed from his gifted hand have left an indelible mark on the political culture. In many ways, he is a quintessential American success story. He was born in Germany and emigrated to the United States with his mother when he was only 6 years old.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the...
He almost single-handedly created American editorial cartooning. He was very much a Republican. However, on your little device there...
Yes.
Call up, write in Thomas Nast, the Irish.
Oh.
And see how he portrayed them.
Oh, dear.
Is there any relation to Cond Nast?
No.
Oh, interesting question, though.
But not.
Irish.
Not interesting or relevant.
No, it's not interesting.
Well, and the thing is, when you say that he was a Republican, you know, if you listen to, as we've talked about before, Abraham Lincoln's speech at Cooper
yes.
Union, he talks about how Democrats are the conservatives and Republicans were the liberals. They wanted to change the status quo, the way things had been. And,
yes.
You know, the idea of keeping things the same and keeping slavery was incomprehensible to him. So was Thomas Nast a liberal Republican
yes,
or
yeah,
conservative?
Yes, very much, yeah.
Oh, so there you go.
Hated the Confederacy.
Oh dear.
Oh yeah. There it is.
Here you go, Todd, the guy with the pipe. That's his portrayal depiction of the Irish.
Oh my God.
The hairy faced monkey.
Yeah, that's it.
That's awful.
That's a depiction of an Irishman.
And he didn't like the Catholics either.
No, he's got a Catholic bishop over the. They're slicing open the Democratic Party, which is a goose, I guess. That's
okay. Yeah, but he has yikes. He has the Catholic bishops coming out of the water, but their mitres, you know, the funny hats they wear, mm-hmm. actually are becoming alligator jaws. So they're coming to devour
Good
America.
Golly, yeah, he did not have a very positive impression of the Irish.
No, he did not.
Whoa.
Sorry, I don't know how we got there from here, but there you are.
There it is.
Wow, that's unfortunate.
But this is some incredible drawing. Anyway, Thomas Nastrom.
Beautiful. Thomas right. Nastrom. I can't believe you. I can't. Where is that again?
It's at the Kohler Hotel in Kohler, Wisconsin.
Awesome.
It's fantastic. Well, the Kohler Club, I believe, is what. Oh, American Club.
Can I go there?
The American Club in Kohler, Wisconsin. Absolutely.
Okay.
We'll have to figure out a way to get a corporate gig so we can. It'll be
the Thomas
easier.
Nastrom.
Yeah, the Thomas Nastrom. Tell me something good. 312-981-7200. What's making you happy tonight? What makes you smile? We want to know. 312-981-7200. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me.
We are winding down and getting ready to turn the station over to Nick D. Always lovely to hang out with some great guests, including Todd Belcour, who is the executive director of Social Change. And you can go to socialchange.site.
That's right.
Socialchange.site. Follow Todd at Social Change on Twitter as well.
CHI Social Change is our nonprofit, Social Change.
CHI Social Change
That's
on
right.
Twitter. And we also have Scott Stantis, one of our always a regular here at WGN Radio on a lot of the shows, actually. It was fun hearing you on Brian and Noonan's show as I was walking through a cemetery, which was weird. It had nothing to do. I didn't say, oh, Scott's going to be on the radio. I should go take a walk in a cemetery.
And hang out with dead people.
Yeah. I like walking in cemeteries. Ashley, I don't know if you needed to know that about me, but I take long contemplative walks through cemeteries.
I mean, it's peaceful.
It is really peaceful. And Declan, by the way, loved it. I didn't realize we'd never taken a walk through a cemetery with Declan, and he was like, just, it was a beautiful sunny day, you know, and it was lovely, and we just went for a walk in the cemetery, and we were listening to you on my on my little speakers as you were on
the
show. My something good is one of our listeners, Paul, who's so generous with his wonderful comments and emails. And by the way, Paul, I want to let you know that I think that we're going to design the shirt based on the one that you sent. Todd, I have a new kind of, not when people tell me to smile, I always wonder, you know, do you have any idea? There's so many things going on, and I smile a lot.
Yeah,
so just that one moment when I happen to look serious and someone wants me to look pretty for them. So I said, you know what? My face is not about you.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we're creating a shirt, and our listener Paul sent me one, and he had the design made up and put Patty V on the back. And we like how big the lettering is. I love the way it looks, so we're going to take it to the one of the t-shirt places that I work with in Chicago.
There you go.
And have those made up. So, Paul, you are our something good tonight. So thank you so much for. And he said that his wife and his daughter tease him about how much he enjoys the show. So tell them that the adoration goes right back at you from all of us here in Chicago. Todd, tell me something good.
I'm grateful for the fact that our nonprofit Social Change has had not one, not two, but three amazing successes in the legislature in Springfield, all relating to advancing the American dream, access to business ownership, access to housing, access to jobs, parole reform, all in honor of an amazing woman, Miss Olome Prince Adams. So if you haven't had a chance to check us out at socialchange.site or at CHI Social Change on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we'd love for your support. We'd love for you to get involved and particularly honor this amazing woman who's done so much for her family. And we're trying to model that behavior through our nonprofit by doing something for others.
Well, that's wonderful. I love
thank
it.
You.
Keep helping people. And I just donated to the to your fund.
Oh,
everyone
you.
Can join us. What do you want to say, Scott?
I just came in from earlier this evening. Was at the Chicago Help Initiative, which helps feed homeless folks. But it doesn't end there. That's just the beginning. Gets them into social work. Gets them to try to get some medical help. Tries to improve their lives. And now I come on this show. And here's Todd Belcour, and then we have Sarah Ward from the Sky Art.
Right, isn't that great?
And all these great people doing great work and doing, you know, doing the Lord's work. I mean, it's just, it makes me feel, A, inadequate, but B, it also makes me feel inspired that there's people out there doing this kind of work and making the world this much better for people who really need it. And that is my something great.
Well, that's tonight. And I think it's lovely as well. I love it. Well, I look forward to hanging out with you guys again very soon. I don't know if you can, well, you know, according to your schedules, I know you have a lot going on. I also want to make sure that folks know that tomorrow night we're going to have our wonderful winemaker, the extraordinary Susan Dannenberger, who will be reviewing Fleabag. We'll be pairing a wine with the series. Have you watched Fleabag?
No, I hear great things about this.
Oh, my goodness. Do you watch? Do you get a chance to watch very much? I know that you have a lot of long
hours.
Which
channel is it on?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay, no.
I'll have to share my account with you.
If it's on WTTW, I got you. But
all right,
besides that, I'm a little that's out of my range.
All right. Ashley, before we go to the quick break, do you have something good for us?
I do, actually, yeah. My mom, she was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer not that long ago, and she had a surgery to get it all removed. So today she had her recheckup to make sure that everything was gone, and everything is gone.
Oh, we're so glad to hear that. Yeah. That's wonderful. What's your mom's name?
Allison.
Allison, we're so glad to hear the good news.